A un primero de mayo.
Hello and welcome to the Pick a Pop Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Dusenberry Jr. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD, that's TheSamD. Use the hashtag Pick a Pop on Twitter to keep up with the show when it's dropping. That's hashtag Pick and Pop, Pick and Pop, no and, Pick the letter N, Pop, hashtag it. Subscribe and rate on iTunes, 5 stars, nothing less, you know how we do. Subscribe and rate on iTunes, search the Pick and Pop podcast. The is very important, the or the, depending on how you want to pronounce it. The Pick and Pop podcast, very important. I see y'all out there with the Pick and Pop and the, I see y'all. The Pick and Pop podcast. Search for that on iTunes, subscribe and rate, tell a friend. Stitcher Radio, Google Play. Also, you can find the Pick and Pop Podcast. SoundCloud.com/showfreesports, where you can also find the Pick and Pop Podcast. So, yo, it's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the playoff season. It's the second season. It's the season where, you know, role players become household names, where stars become superstars, where superstars become immortals. This is the time. This is the season for that. And so I was going to come on here with a preview pod on Friday leading into the playoffs, but I realized by the time I drop it, you know, games are going to be going on Saturday. So I tabled that and said, you know, we're going to do a recap of the weekend, the recap of the 4 games on Saturday and the 4 games on Sunday. And man, do we have a lot to talk about. So, you know, I am doing this very late Sunday night. The last game from Sunday just finished, which was Minnesota versus the Rockets. And we're going to have to start there. We're going to have to start there because there's a lot of things that involve me in this series. And one is my love, my former love, a current hate, a long time hate, and another, I want to say love, but a former side piece. So when it comes to eternal hate, it's got to be Tibbs. So Tibbs got this team into the playoffs, a team with arguably 3 all-star caliber players. He got them to be the 8th seed in the West. Jimmy Buckets is back, and I'm not sure what's funnier. Is it funny that at one point, for the large stretch of the second quarter and third quarter, it was like Tibbs was back in Chicago with Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose going ISO ball for the majority of the time? Was that the funniest thing, or was the funniest thing that's the most telling thing about Tibbs, the fact that Carl Anthony Towns, a guy that many considered, myself included, to be, you know, top 20 in this league. You have a top 20 player in this league, a top 10 big man, arguably top 5 big man in this league. Again, granted, first ever playoff game, and he gets 9 shots. 9 shots. And he routinely, because of the way that the Rockets play, they do a lot of switching. Pick and rolls, they switch. They rarely, if ever, fight over the screen or go under the screen to stick with their man. They just automatically switch. That's their system. That's their philosophy. Fine. Carl Anthony Towns, many a time, had Harden, Eric Gordon, Ariza, damn near everybody on the lineup except Capella, guarded him in the post, and they didn't go to him. They didn't feed him. He gets 9 shots. 9 shots. Carl Anthony Towns, top 20 player in the league. 9 shots. In a game that was relatively close throughout. A game where the point fraud made a point fraud mistake and almost threw the game away. You saw that, right? Close of possession, point fraud, up 3, throws the ball 3/4 of the way of the court, way out of bounds. Gave Minnesota one last possession, down 3 to tie it up. And we saw, and we'll get to it, we saw what, you know, Milwaukee was able to do with one last possession, down 3. I mean, the point fraud flings that ball 50 feet ahead, and it sails out of bounds. First thing I've remembered, the first thing that made me remember, was that Steph behind the back. You remember that? You remember that Steph behind the back game 7, 2016? 73-9. Two-time fraudulent MVP, weak-ass ankles, weak-ass shins, weak-ass quads, hamstrings. Yeah, I remember that. He threw that behind-the-back pass to Clay, thinking that was going to seal the game, and it sealed out of bounds. And then the King came down and almost made the world stop its rotational access, but almost dunking on Draymond. And then Steph went out there and got locked up by Kevin Love. You remember that? But yeah, so the point fraud almost threw this game away. And boy, would that have been fodder for me. But back to Karl Anthony Towns. Karl Anthony Towns gets 9 shots. 3 of 9. Wasn't really that active. Now, we have done the numbers on this podcast. We have done the numbers on the Pick and Pop podcast where we know somehow, some way, with Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns, somehow it's Andrew Wiggins who takes the most shots. When you have Jimmy Butler, who's a top 5 two-way player, and is arguably a top 10 player in this league, and like I said with Karl Anthony Towns, arguably top 20, top 5 big, and somehow Andrew Wiggins, who has not lived up to the expectations of being drafted number 1 overall all them years ago, somehow finds a way to take the most field goal attempts on this team. So we have Karl Anthony Towns with 9 shots. Jimmy Butler, the perennial number 1 option, who Tibbs runs everything through, with 11 shots. Jeff Teague, 9 shots. Yeah, Jamal Crawford and Derrick Rose both chucking up double-figure shots. 11 for Crawford, 14 for D. Rose. Who took the most shots, you ask? You already know where I'm going. You know who took the most shots. It is amazing to sit and watch Andrew Wiggins take the most shots on this team. 15 shots for A. Wiggins. And it's not like he shot horribly. 7 of 15. But it's the volume, it's the fact that he gets to control the flow of the offense when he has the ball. That should never happen unless Cat and Butler are out the game. Then he could be the guy. But it's routinely where it's Cat in the post, Butler on the wing, and Wiggins is playing iso ball. And that is the problem with Tibbs. And that, in a nutshell, besides the fact that he likes to grind dudes' knees into pixie dust. Besides the fact that he likes to play everybody in the starting lineup 40-plus minutes. What up, Cat? You play 40 minutes in your first playoff game against a team that likes to run up and down. That's good management. 40 minutes for your best play. But it's not that. That's not even the biggest. The biggest issue is he has no offensive philosophy. His offensive philosophy is whoever is the best at iso ball, take the ball and do what you do. So that's why he went back into the Wayback Machine thinking it was 2010 and he had Derrick Rose out there getting buckets, but it was stopping the flow of the offense. And Karl Anthony Towns is out there just kind of hovering, not sure what to do when you have a guy who thinks he's going back to his MVP year out here chucking it up. I mean, dog, Karl Anthony Towns, 9 shots at 40 minutes. Derrick Rose, 14 shots at 23. Come on, man. If you're Tibbs, I don't know what you need to tell A. Wiggins. You know, I don't know if it's more of a thing where Tibbs doesn't care. And he'll say all the right things in the postgame. Yes, we're going to try to get Cat more involved. And I'm sure they will. But they could have had it easily with mismatches. I mean, you can't even begin to take this series deep. If you're Minnesota, if Karl Anthony Towns is only getting 9 shots a game, you just can't do it. And as far as defense, which, you know, we keep hearing how great Tibbs is, you can you know, if you're here like me in the New York, New Jersey area, this New York media loves to pontificate about how great Tom Thibodeau is at defensive schemes. We know what he did in Boston. He also had KG. He also had Rajon Rondo. Those are two great guys to have, you know, starting up your offense along with Perk and Tony Allen. But needless to say, the system is what won that the Celtics that championship. The defensive schemes that Thibodeau set up got that system right. That got the championship. Not the fact that you had KG, Tony Allen, Rajon Rondo, Young Perkins. None of that. It was the system. So the taskmaster of this defensive scheme, you leave Derrick Rose, who's never been a defensive force at all. Not at Simeon, not at Memphis, not in Chicago, New York, anywhere has he ever been a defensive presence. You leave him on an island with James Harden, arguably the most unstoppable offensive force in the league, routinely. How is that the best defensive scheme at it? When you got Taj Gibson out there, who has guarded wings and point guards before. During that Bulls run, that was a big part of their defense, is having Taj Gibson being able to switch off. But you left Derrick Rose on an island routinely, on ISOs routinely, against the Beard. And you wonder why he put up 44 points. You wonder why James Harden put up 44 points. You wonder why he switched cheese through the defense easily and finished at the cup. It's because he's on the island with D. Rose. How is that your best option? Is Tibbs really out here saying, let Harden get his and we'll figure everything else out? Because if that's the case, then you have Jimmy Butler, who at times was on the point fraud, but not a lot, to verify that theory. And then the few times you have Butler on Harden, Harden was able to go by Jimmy Butler. So now what? So what are you going to do defensively? If your best wing defender, which is by far on that team, Jimmy Butler, if he's getting Swiss cheesed up by James Harden, then you got to start trapping. You got to start trapping. You got to start doing something. I'll make the point fraud beat me. I can't see the point fraud putting up 44. I can see Harden putting up 44 every game of this series. And if they keep letting him put up 44, it's only going to be a four-game series. So if you're Tibbs, and with Jimmy Butler and A. Wiggins, and at times even Jamal Crawford, D'ing him up, he gets 44 predominantly on ISOs, then we need to trap. That's the best I got. Unless you want to go out here and go wild and put, you know, Gorky Jang out here, maybe try to go extra big on Harden, but that's just, you know, he's going to get a step back in his grill, and then that'll be the end of that. So there's nothing you could do to stop Harden. So this seems to be the old Jordan theory. Let Jordan get his. Or when LeBron was hot in Miami, let Bron get his, and we'll try to figure out how to stop Wade and Bosh. This is what teams are trying to do. Or where was Kobe? Let Kobe shoot himself either in the game or out the game. Let him get his, or we got to stop Gasol and Bynum. This is what it seems to me. And again, it's one game, and there'll be adjustments. But from one game, if this was the best strategy you could come up with, which is let Harden go nuts and we'll try to figure it out, you can't do that. Because Harden still goes nuts, and then you have Clint Capella. I mean, this Clint Capella is out here getting buckets. And he's getting buckets in such an easy manner. He put up the easiest 24 points I've ever seen a big get. An easy 24. And it's just an array of alley-oops and dump-offs. I counted two legit post-ups where he scored. Two legit post-ups out of 15 shots. Everything else was dump-offs and dunks. And, you know, he might need to stop feeling himself. He was feeling himself a little bit too much. He's calling for and-ones and everything. He's trying to get the crowd hype. He's flexing. He might need to slow down a little bit because you're playing with the fraud and the beard, and that makes a big man's job extremely easy. And I'm not really here for Clint Capella to be out here flexing. But this game, in essence, to me, shows a lot of Thibodeau's flaws. You have Karl Anthony Towns taking 9 shots. You have Andrew Wiggins taking the most shots, which was a horrific pattern from the regular season that has still continued into the postseason. You have Derrick Rose, who played well, but doesn't initiate an offense. You know, if you got Jeff Teague almost had a triple-double in this game. And he's a guy that can force the point forward to play D. He's a guy that Harden can't, you know, lean off of. He can't go do weak side help where you got Jeff Teague. Because Jeff Teague can hit the jump shot or penetrate, which is his primary, you know, special ability. So Thibodeau is going to get exposed here. Now, there are rumors that no matter how far this team goes, being at the Timberwolves, and look, nobody's picking them to win this series. But you would think with this talent, with the names they have on this roster on paper, you would think they should be able to push the Rockets to six games. At least six. Not seven. There's a lot of pundits, national guys that are out here saying, every series is going to go seven games, six games. Be easy. Watch the games from November to April instead of just hopping on late in the season and riding the wave and just saying wild shit for clicks and for hot takes. Be easy. This series is going to go no more than five games. Only way this series goes to a six game is if the Rockets choke one away. I'll give Minnesota one of the next three games, but that's it. But Thibodeau's got to do something. He's got to find a way to get the best player on his team, which I do feel arguably could be Karl Anthony Towns because Jimmy Butler's not 100%. Karl Anthony Towns is the most dynamic player. Can we say that? He's the most dynamic player with the fact that he's a big, he can block shots when he runs the floor. He doesn't like to run the floor, and that was something else Capella did. Capella outran him. He outran him tonight. That's not a good look for a guy that we're saying is, you know, arguably top 20 in the league and definitely a top five big in the league. You can't be getting outrun by Clint Capella. Not in your first playoff game. Now, again, is that a factor of Thibodeau's taskmaster ways? I believe Karl Anthony Towns finished in the top 10 most minutes played in the league. And we know how hard Minnesota had to work just to get in. Beating Denver in essentially a play-in game. Is all those minutes catching up with Karl Anthony Towns that now he can't run the floor against Clint Capella? Is Clint Capella going to burn Karl Anthony Towns for another three, four games? It remains to be seen. So, you know, after game one, this is what we need. I'm going to try to do things where it's like, what are we going to look for game two? Are we going to see more shots for Karl Anthony Towns? I think we will. Problem is, I don't think it's going to come in the flow of the offense. I think it's going to be forced. They have some natural mismatches just off the way that the Rockets play defense with the auto-switching off the pick and roll that I think they're going to try to like overdo it and force feed Cat, and I don't think it's going to be as clean and as rhythmic as it should be. So I think you'll see Karl Anthony Towns get more shots. I definitely think you'll see Jimmy Butler be more assertive. He only took 11 shots. I can't remember the last time where Jimmy Bucket's been the lead dog and he's already taken 11 shots. But in the end, will any of this matter? No. So before that, we had the OK3. The OK3 hosted their first playoff game, and it was against Utah. And what some are, again, predicting to be a 6-7 game series. And, you know, OK3 came out. There was a little bit of a malaise at points in the game offensively for the OK3. But the fact of the matter is, they have more talent than the Utah Jazz. They got more going on for them. You know, Russie went out here, did not shoot well. They forced Russie to pull up and take transition threes or those, you know, 18-footers that seem to be straight off the bounce. They forced him into a lot of those, and they let him get his shot off whenever he wanted. He was 10 of 25. But when you got PG-13, and this is where having that extra guy, you know, we talk about where Paul George was in a situation where if his shot wasn't on, Indiana struggled to score. And there were times that there were points, you know, last year where OKC, where if Russ' shot wasn't on, they had a struggling offense. There was nobody else that he could lean on to say, yo, I'm off, go get yours. Same thing for Paul George in Indiana. Now you put them together, and here we go, symbiotic relationship, right? We got Russie, who was off. I mean, the numbers don't say. If you just look at the stat line doesn't say he was off because he had 29, 13, and 8. But 10 of 25. 10 of 25. Didn't hit a 3, 0 for 4. But then you got Paul George going off for 36 with 8 threes and 13 of 20. That's where you can run through teams. And then you got Hoodie Mello. Hoodie Mello at 15. And that's what they need. They can't have Melo be off. As much as PG hitting A3s and Russ being Russ was a huge factor in them winning, you need got to have that third guy. And that third guy is Hoodie Melo. And I think we'll see this type of production from Hoodie Melo going forward. It was an ugly stat line. But again, you put a 15 and 7 when you're not really a big part of the offense. That's solid. And this and again, he's still adjusting to it. I mean, this is the first time in his career, but he's in the playoffs and he's not a number one option. So now you have, you know, not only do you have to adjust, you know, through the season being the third option, being the fourth option, then becoming somewhat of a Vinny Microwave Johnson role player off the bench type of role. Now he's in the playoffs, which he hasn't been in a few years. Shout out to the Knicks. And now he has to readjust again. How do I become a contributor, just a contributor, in the playoffs? So Melo's become the guy that runs with the bench mob. You know, when it's Patterson and Grant and Felton, you know, and even to a lesser extent, no, well, not really Ferguson. He ain't play a lot. But, I mean, you know, just the routine guys you see that come off the bench for OKC, when they try to mix match the starters with the bench, it's mostly when, you know, PG and Russ take a seat, Melo becomes the guy again with the bench mob. So he has to adjust to that role. So 10 of 25 for Russ, but the stat line is still a Russie stat line. 36, 8 threes, 13 of 20 for PG 13, which is peak PG. And then you got Melo, Hoodie Melo, chipping in with 15. And as great as Donovan Mitchell played, he doesn't have enough help. And I think, you know, the OK3's pretty much their philosophy this whole series is we're going to let Ricky Rubio shoot. Ricky Rubio wants to be White Chocolate J. Will. He wants to be Pistol Pete. He wants to be, you know, the Flair. He wants to be Steve Nash. Nah, bruh, you about to be a chucker out here because he can't shoot. And for many people, they never really watched Ricky Rubio play because he was in Minnesota and in the Dodgers when they were never making the playoffs. And now, you know, he was in Utah this whole season. So still, a lot of people did not see him. Now they see him, they're like, damn, Ricky Rubio can't shoot. And yeah, that's been the MO for him all his whole career. 5 of 18. 5 of 18, 0 for 3 from 3. They're going to let him take whatever shot he wants. I mean, Donovan Mitchell took his shots 11 of 22, 50%. 50% for the Rook. Not afraid of the spotlight. He's not shaky in the light. But Ricky Rubio, man, Ricky Rubio out here loving that Jimmy. And that Jimmy's broke. So I don't see this being a quick series. I guess it's another series I see going 5. Maybe Utah nuts up and gets 2 games to push it to 6. But I think based off what I saw in game 1, this, to me, should be a relatively quick series. I don't see a sweep. I think Utah's definitely enough to get a game at the crib or maybe sneak and get game 2. And, you know, the OK3, they have a tendency, because of the heavy isolation ball, if Russie goes into one of those modes where no matter how hot PG is, I'm just going to go ahead and go for mine because I got to get mine. Sun don't shine, then sun don't shine. If he goes into that mode, then I can see OK3 shooting away a game or two. But outside of that, this series is going to be a wrap. There's not much here to break down. I know one thing if I was Utah. Joe Ingles, he's getting his wake-up call. Joe Ingles has been really good this whole season. He's been not necessarily a revelation. Those who watch the game know he's a bucket. But again, we talk about the difference between the regular season and the playoffs. Regular season, you could run your pet plays and you might catch a team, you know, no matter what they do with the schedule, you might catch a team off a tough road trip or it's a tough home stretch, you know, three games and five nights type of situation. But when it comes to the playoffs, they know all your pet plays. You're not going to be able to get a lot of those off. You're just going to have to out-execute or just be dominant and just take over. And Joe Ingles had a struggle because they put PG-13 on him. So not only was PG able to get, you know, 36 points with eight threes, PG was a lock up, you know, outside of Donovan Mitchell, their second best offensive player. PG did that. And that's why PG is going to get paid in the offseason. That's why PG at one point was right where people really thought he could be the type of guy that can, you know, compete with LeBron in the East. That's the Paul George we got in game one earlier tonight. 36, eight threes, and he locked up Joe Ingles. Now, I'm not saying it's relatively hard to lock up Joe Ingles, but I'm saying Utah runs a lot of sets for Joe Ingles, and wherever Joe Ingles went, there was PG-13. Relatively quick series for OK3 against Utah, and the winner of this will likely face Houston. Will face Houston. So we want to see OK3 versus Houston, and that'll be a great second round series. So we just need to hurry up and get to that. So I think, you know, five games, and I think we'll get OK3 moving into the second round. Well, I guess we now have to get into the Cavs. So the Cavs took an L at the crib. They took an L at the Q. And it was a dominant L, a decisive L at the crib to the Pacers. And it's the 4-5 matchup. But, you know, everybody just assumes, well, it's LeBron. It's LeBron. It's the first round. It really doesn't matter. He's going to find a way. And what we learned today, is that this team, as much as they improved at the trade deadline by getting those older retreads out of there, and that was still very important, the fact of the matter is they don't have enough. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say they don't have enough to not make it out the East. I'm just saying, and, you know, this is not a revelation at all, but it's just they just don't have enough to win a chip. When you can let Oladipo, who I'm not a big fan of, now again, has his game improved? Yes. Does the trade with OKC look like a win for Indiana? Sure, to a certain extent. I mean, they still got the lesser player in the deal, but sure, for them, it works out perfectly. But man, they can run with the Cavs. They're outrunning the Cavs. They out-hustled the Cavs. They at times out-executed the Cavs. And you can't have Bogdanovich go nuts. You can't have, I mean, look, Miles Turner is good. Miles Turner, I think, is going to be very good. But he's not, you know, Karl Anthony Towns good. He ain't. He's not, you know, he's not Anthony Davis good. He's not in that class of big. But damn, the Cavs made him look like it earlier today. The Cavs made him look like that. I mean, 16 and 8, 6 of 9. Had a block, but he was more of just a presence at the rim. And Jeff Green looked shaky in the light. Jeff Green, who that was Ty Lue's first big thing. Ty Lue back. First thing I'm doing to reassert my control over the team, because everybody thinks it's LeBron as a de facto coach. First thing I'm doing, I'm putting Jeff Green in. And not only is this for the end of the regular season, it's for the postseason. And man, I mean, I'm Hoya Saxa all day, but Jeff Green looks shaky in the light. He kept putting up jumpers and he kept bricking them. I mean, the team overall just couldn't shoot. And when they can't shoot, we've reached a point where, as great as he looked in the regular season, in the MVP-type regular season, we could start to see just a little bit of the decline of LeBron. Just a little bit. You know, I mentioned that game against Washington on the last pod, but he just went bully ball. He tried the bully ball tonight. He tried the bully ball tonight. But the problem is, he had Baby Bron in front of him. And, you know, I have certain players that I just like the way they play. And Lance Stephenson is one of those guys. I had high hopes for Lance Stephenson. I call him Baby Bron out of affection. It's not a sarcastic thing. It's a thing where I really feel he has the same skill set and physique of LeBron. He has it everywhere except upstairs. And therein lies the difference. He's got the same figure. He's got the same, you know, the same height, the same build with the muscles. He could play bully ball. But just when it comes to upstairs, he just doesn't have it. But man, when Lance is going, when you can, you know, I won't say out LeBron, because nobody on the face of this earth can do that. But when you can go bully ball against LeBron, that's something these guys have not seen. That's something these Cavalier teammates have not seen. When LeBron, now look, LeBron can get a bucket on Lance anytime he wants. The thing is, Lance can give it right back. And give it right back in the same way. Right? He can go and take LeBron in the paint and spin off or charge right at him and get to the cup. If Lance could be Lance, good Lance. I guess it's like Manny being Manny in baseball. If we could get good Lance for at least two more games, this going to go seven. Because Oladipo is going to be able to play like this through the whole series. Because the Cavs have no wing defenders. The Cavs have no wing defenders. Now, the Cavs shot horribly. I think at one point they were like 4 for 20-22 from three. They live and die by the three. They made that choice when they decided to, you know, emulate the Dubs offense. They made that choice to be more of a three-ball dominant team. So this is what they are. And if they're not hitting them, it's a wrap for them. And when, you know, the other team comes down and they got Bogdanovich, they've got Miles Turner, they've got Oladipo, and then they got Baby Bron all out here chucking from three or just getting layups straight to the paint with the Ole defense. I mean, what's the king to do? What can he do? This isn't 24-year-old Bron. This isn't Bron against Detroit where he could just take over, you know, 23 in the fourth quarter. This ain't that Bron anymore. For all the times undefeated, LeBron could not rescue them tonight. They couldn't make a shot. They couldn't box out. They couldn't grab loose balls. They just did not have the effort needed for a team that should feel they have a chip on their shoulder. They should. But I don't know if they do. The way they play today, I mean, Calderon was absolutely trash. Now, I'm not saying Calderon's a piece or even an important piece, but you can't have him out here. How many minutes he played? Stand by. Look, bro, he played 10 minutes. I would love to see his plus minus for them 10 minutes. It was a bad 10 minutes for Calderon. Even LeBron looked at him a couple times like, yo, bro, what are you doing? Yo, his offensive rating... This is hilarious. Bron's offensive rating for the game, 114. Which, you know, is what you would expect from Bron, right? Now, again, these are advanced metrics, so take them how you will. But let me just point this out as an example of how trash Calderon was. So, LeBron, 114 offensive rating. Calderon, 100 less. Right, 14. A 14 rating. You know, Kevin Love, 95 offensive rating. You know, Rodney Hood, 86. George Hill, 84. J.R. Smith, 103. He actually shot the ball pretty well. But your man, Jose Calderon, 14. Keep him on that bench, bro. Where's Osman? Where's CeeDee? We won't get into Tristan. But, you know, if K-Love's going to keep getting Swiss cheesed up by Miles Turner, we might have to dust off Tristan. I mean, even Trevor Booker's getting getting money in the paint. I mean, Sabonis with Swiss cheese against LeBron, and you hope that, you know, they keep that matchup going if you want the Cavs to advance. But I'm not sure. This might be, you know, one of those seven-game series that everybody keeps, you know, predicting. This might be a seven-game series. I don't think there's a switch that the Cavs could turn on against these Pacers. I don't think there's a switch. And the reason why there's not a switch is LeBron doesn't have a lot of help. Kevin Love is not a switch guy. Like, Kyrie was able to just turn it on and just go. And LeBron could just get out the way and say, all right, bro, go. Kung Fu Kyrie, go. He can't do that with anybody on this team unless JR gets hot. Like, there's nobody on this team that LeBron could just say, all right, bro, go. I'm kind of in the doldrums here. I'm kind of, you know, I'm dealing with Lance. I got a lot on my plate right now. Let me take a break and let you get off. He can't do that with anybody on this team. So this is one of those series that I think will go six, maybe even seven games. I still think the Cavs will find a way, but Oladipo is going to get his the entire series. This was not a misnomer. He's a bucket against this Cavs team because they have no wing defenders. Rodney Hood is an adequate defender. Jordan Clarkson, I thought, would have shown a little bit more, but he was Swiss cheese out here. So I look for this to be a six, maybe seven game series. And, you know, for the fraudulent ways of the Raptors and the Celtics, I would hope that the Cavs make it to the second round. But the whole notion of the Raptors having an easy path to the finals with the way the Cavs look tonight may be factual. And to finish off Sunday's games, you know, the first game to me was the best game. It was the best game. You know, yes, it went overtime and all that stuff, but in terms of, for me, watching a game, you could see the in-game adjustments. You could see the strategy. And you could just see the philosophies being put to the test by both Milwaukee and Boston. And, you know, this is a team that I thought Boston should not want to see in this first round. You know, Washington, I felt, you know, Washington always finds a way to self-destruct. And we saw that against Toronto on Saturday. Milwaukee is a team that I think has enough to go into Boston and get a dub and not only make this a six-game series, but can even win this series. So for me, I was very interested to see how Milwaukee and Boston shakes out. And game one, man, Giannis went nuts. 35 and 13. Chris Middleton went nuts. 31, 8 and 6. 5 threes. Problem is they got nothing else from nobody else. They got absolutely nothing from Henson. Nothing from Tony Snell. And Eric Bledsoe was trash. Just call it what it is. So he was trash offensively, getting them into the flow of the offense. And I know he's not a pure point guard in the sense that I like him, but he is enough of a point guard. He's put up enough assists in this league to be able to run an offense and to set guys up in a decent position. But he was trash, 4-for-12. 4-for-12, 5 turnovers, only 4 assists. He was trash. And not only was he trash offensively, Terry Rozier, you know, obviously we know the highlight where Terry Rozier kind of brought it back Kung Fu Kyrie style. And you know he got that move from Kyrie. You know Kyrie probably did that to him in practice. And he's like, yo, I need to put that in my arsenal. So he puts that move on Bledsoe. Bledsoe got shook to the point where he didn't even defend the three. Like, he was so far away, he didn't even bother closing out. He's about a good 5 feet away, you know. So Bledsoe trash on offense and then let Terry Rozier go wild on him. But the main guy who kept them afloat when Milwaukee was asserting himself was Al Horford. And that's the guy that, you know, I did a couple radio hits, and that was the guy that I kept saying, it's going to be Al Horford. When people asked me, you know, who's going to be the one that they lean on, I'm like, it's going to be Al Horford. He's the vet. And, you know, Tatum got his. Jaylen Brown got his. And then the aforementioned Rozier. But, and it was more Rozier extremely late in the game. But that, you know, that the force that kept the game close and even chipped away at that Milwaukee lead in late third quarter, early fourth quarter, it was Al Horford. He was getting money. And then you got Morris. And if I'm Milwaukee, that's where the game changed. The bench points. Bench points were a huge deal in this. And when you have Marcus Morris coming off the bench, giving it what he had, 21. I mean, he took 20 shots. So you got Marcus Morris who's coming off the bench gunning. And the Bucks really didn't have an answer with their bench. You know, Brogdon had 16, but that was just because, mostly because of the foul trouble and the trashness of Eric Bledsoe. And, you know, I finally learned the Bucks coach's name, Prunty, right? That's dude name, right? Joe Prunty or whatever. Prunty, bruh, you know you got Jabari Parker back, right? Like, I don't care if it's about a minutes restriction or what. I need more from Bari. Bari got to be out here, bro. You can't give me 15 minutes, especially when you're getting killed on the inside, whether it's Baines, Horford, Morris. Shit, they even dusted off Greg Monroe, and he was getting big in the fourth quarter. I need more bigs on the floor. John Henson is one of those tweener bigs. But when he's playing up against real bigs, he's always mismatched. That's why he's never been that much prominent in the league. They have long guys. Milwaukee has guys with a lot of length and wingspan, but not a lot of muscle. The only dude with some muscle is Bari. Bari got some muscle on him. He could bang. They need to let Bari get more minutes than 15. I need more minutes from Prunty. Prunty needs to get Bari more minutes. Can't have 15 minutes out of Bari. Because they got killed inside. Middleton's going to be able to get off. Middleton's going to get off. Giannis is going to get off. They need that third guy. And if Bledsoe's going to keep getting roasted by Rozier, which, you know, nobody would have predicted outside of Rozier, then you need to get somebody else in there who could get buckets. And the guy that I think that could get buckets against this team is Jabari. Or if you don't want to go Jabari, dust off Thon Maker. Now, he doesn't have the size, but he's so long, he's got a little bit more muscle than John Henson. You know, Tony Snell had a couple of chances in that OT to grab a couple of loose balls, a couple of loose rebounds, and he didn't. And it led to second and third chance opportunities for the Celtics. And those are things that I would think if Barry was in there instead of Tony Snell, he would have grabbed the rock. Now, again, I'm putting a lot of faith in Barry, but we know how good Barry could be. He's been robbed of it twice to show us how good he could be, but I still feel he has that kind of capability. I'd rather him be on the court and show me he no longer has it than to have him on the pine wondering what if. And that's the amazing part of it is the Bucks only had two guys play a good game and they were right there. Only Giannis and Middleton played well. And they were right there. Brogdon was okay. But Giannis and Middleton were the only dudes who played well. Boston had four dudes, 20 plus. They had a lot of dudes play well. And they went to OT against the Bucks at the crib. So, yes, it was an L for the Bucks. But for me, I still think the Bucks could take these dudes out. Now, they need game two. They can't go down 2-0. They go down 2-0, it's done in five, which would not... It will be a hard five games. I think every game is going to be competitive. I don't see a lot of scenarios where, you know, Boston just blows the doors off Milwaukee. I just don't see it. Milwaukee's too good defensively. And they have a guy in Giannis who could take a game over. They have a guy in Middleton who can get hot and could get off. I just don't see that much happening where Boston could blow the doors off Milwaukee. So it'll be a competitive series, but the series, in essence, will be decided in game two. I need Milwaukee to get that game two dub to drag this out a little bit, because I still feel the Celtics are a fraudulent two seed. But if, you know, if Barry's only getting 15 minutes, if Tony Snell can't grab loose balls, if Bledsoe's still getting Swiss cheesed up by Terry Rozier, then, you know, they're going to make quick work of the Bucks. All right, going into Saturday's game, Saturday's action. Man, there were two good games I was really looking forward to, and one was Miami-Philly. We'll get to that next. But New Orleans-Portland, that was the one for me. New Orleans-Portland, man, I keep talking about how much I love Rajon Rondo. And I know there's some people out there, that there's some of y'all that don't feel the same way I feel about Rajon Rondo. You know, he's a malcontent. He's had issues in certain places. He had issues with certain coaches and with so on and so forth, with teammates and the like. But man, when it comes to being a pure point guard, if you like the game of basketball, when they talk about point guards, you got to mention Rondo, bruh. Bruh, he only has 6 points. 17 dimes, 8 boards. Now again, Unibrow did what we expected him to do, 35 of 14. He should dominate this series because they got no answer for him, right? And you got Mirotić, see red, 16 and 11. And their defensive schematics with Mirotić was something the Bulls never did. So I was very impressed with how the Pels were able to get Mirotić to buy in so hard defensively. He played probably, and this is not hyperbole, I know people, you know, the thing they saw most recently is the best thing they've ever seen or whatever. But legitimately, as a guy who, you know, supports the Bulls from the shadows and has watched Mirotić predominantly his whole career, I have never seen Mirotić play defense like he did in game one against Portland. Never. The way he closed out on traps, the way he closed out on switches, the way he boxed out, he went all in. And he got tired as hell. I mean, he played damn near 40 minutes. I mean, Jrue Holiday, Rondo, Mirotić and the Unibrow all played roughly 40 minutes. So, you know, Mirotić played the best defensive game. Now, he's had better offensive games, obviously. He's put up 30-plus points. I mean, he's a guy that can get hot from the outside and go off. But in terms of defense and effort, that's the most I've ever seen. And Jrue Holiday, hello world. Now, again, if you watch the games, if you know the games, you know Jrue Holiday is a good player. And when he got that extension last year, people went wild saying, yo, how could you give Jrue Holiday this kind of bread? Oh, you saw it. You saw it. 16. No, he ain't had 16. Hold on. Scratch that. 21. My bad. 21 points. Now, again, only 2 assists. His job is not to be a facilitator. That's Rondo. That's Rondo all day. That's why that two-guard lineup works. And that's why when you look at how this Pelicans team is constructed, now that everyone is healthy, obviously, except Boogie, yo, that defensive backcourt is lit. Now, look, we know what Dame Dolla and McCollum could do, but they ain't going to have an easy run here. You know, playoff Rondo is a real thing. I mean, y'all saw what Rondo was doing to the Celtics last year with the Bulls before he got hurt. They went up in there and took the first two. 2-0 to the one seed as an 8 seed. So, you know, look, this. I legitimately think the Pels could win this series. They could win this series. Now, they need this every night. And that's where, you know, the big question mark appears. Can Mirotić play that hard for another 5 games? Maybe another 6 games? Can he go that hard? I don't know. But he showed it once. So if you show it once, to me, that means you can show me it again. Now, he might take that step from role player to star if he could do that. But AD was AD, man. AD is so damn good. It's not, I mean, look, Portland always feels that they're disrespected, always feels they don't get to shine. Even though Dame Dollar's in a lot of commercials, CJ McCollum's doing podcasts, they're getting all the spoils of being known. But they keep playing that underrated card. They keep playing that we don't get the recognition card. They keep playing all those angles. Well, Dame Dollar, 6 of 23. 6 of 23, bruh. 6 of 23. And you had Drew, and you had Playoff Rondo in your grill, at your crib, 6 of 23. CJ, you know, welcome to the podcast game. I'm sure with your clout, you'll get the numbers, the downloads, the streams, and all that stuff. You'll be able to flip a couple of, you know, bills off that. 7 of 18, bruh. 7 of 18 at the crib. Jrue Holiday in them guts. Pause. You know, my old adage is, if I got the best player, I should win. No matter what. If I got the best player on the court, I should win. Anthony Davis is the best player on the court, bruh. Now, Dame Dollar will probably fight me on that. But Anthony Davis is the best player on the court. And if Mirotić can go this hard again a few more times, if Jrue Holiday going to be like this now that he's relatively healthy, and then Playoff Rondo is Playoff Rondo, yo, the Pels is out here. If this ain't with no Boogie. The Pels is out here. So I'm looking forward to game 2. I think Portland will get that dub and kind of right the ship a little bit. Because I don't think Dame Dollar is going to shoot that horribly again. I don't think CJ is going to shoot that horribly again. But when you look at the rest of the Blazers, you know, the role players who, you know, the old adage is role players play better at home. Nurkic, you a role player or you a star? I keep being told you're a star. You know, there's dudes in analytics land that, you know, has Nurkic up there as the god. Jokic and Nurkic right up there as the next gods of the big men. I mean, you got a double-double, but 7 shots? And being put in a blender by AD all night? Shaky in the light. Nurkic. All right. So the process is going. Trust the process has begun. Look, man, they are the 3 seed. They are going up against the Miami Heat. And this is going to be light work for Philly. This is going to be light work. Miami is not a good team, man. Miami is not. If you look at point differential, you look at all that type of stuff, man, this Miami team is not that much better than a 500 team, than a slightly over 500 team. And, you know, this series is going to be about Ben Simmons. I mean, because, you know, Embiid is out for game 2, so he's going to miss the first 2 games in Philly. And I still think Philly's going to go up 2-0. I see Miami getting 1 game. And, you know, there's dudes out here saying this game, this series is going to go 7 and that Miami could win. Dog, you know, I know you got national platforms and you get cashing big checks, but I don't know if you're really watching these games. Like, Philly's not losing this series. And they're damn sure not losing this series in 7. Now, I'll eat those words if it comes to it, but I'm pretty comfortable knowing that I don't think that's going to happen in the slightest. So, you got Philly, who just better. They have better talent than Miami. Miami's one of those gritty teams that has to slow things down, you know, force the action. They can't do that when you got a 6'9", 6'10 point guard who is not afraid to go to the cup at will. And then when you have Bellinelli, Ilyasova, out here chucking it up from three and getting buckets, what are they going to do? I mean, 17 and 14 for Ben Simmons. 17 and 14. And it was light. It was light. They put a 130. 130. And it was easy. Saric with 20. JJ Redick, 28. I don't expect those numbers to continue. Bellinelli, 25. Ilyasova, 17. You can make a case that that was peak Sixers. But even if you shave off a little bit of that, that was still more than what the Heat could bring to the table. The Heat got 26 from Olynyk. You're not getting that again. 15 from Dragic. Yeah, against this Philly team, yeah, that's about what you're going to get. He might score maybe low 20s, but that mid-teen to low 20, that's about what you're going to get. And he got nothing from anybody else. You know, Whiteside, who likes to talk a lot of shit to Embiid, trust the process, home team Cameroon. You know, that was supposed to be an advantage. They have a max player at a position where there's not a lot of people with his skill set in the league. He gets 12 minutes with no Embiid. Amir Johnson, bruh. Amir Johnson. That's who, you know, they had to go up against, and still, they didn't trust Hassan enough to get off. 12 minutes. So, you know, I think this is just a precursor. I think this is light work for Philly. You know, I'm a little unnerved about how easy Olynyk got off. But again, I don't think that's going to be anything going forward. I think that's just, he was just the only one that says, yo, I'm going for mines. Dragic, who I think is overrated. You know, D-Wade is out the pasture. You know, he had a good run. He won a couple of games down the stretch with some, you know, classic Wade, old school Wade moments. But 4 out of 7? Nah. Miami don't have the horses. Maybe they get a game at the crib in South Beach, but Philly will move on to the second round. And it's a very real possibility that Philly, if Cleveland stumbles, Philly can get to the finals. And that's no bullshit. And that's a thing where if you add Embiid to this mix, you know, trust the process, complete the process might be this year in terms of getting to the finals. Washington-Toronto, I mean, for me, this didn't really prove anything. Washington took that L like they supposed to, and T-Dot got off, Lowry got off, especially in the second half with his defense on Wall and Beal. You know, DeRozan played well. It wasn't vintage DeRozan, it wasn't, you know, low-key MVP candidate DeRozan. He had 17, but Serge Ibaka, I mean, where was that dude not only last year? Where was that dude in Orlando? Some people at OKC might say, where was that dude? I mean, imagine, yo, sidebar. Yo, the Thunder really broke up Durant, Russi, and Harden because of Serge Ibaka. Can you imagine that, bruh? Assuming Harden gets the MVP this year, right? And I don't really do the who should get what award stuff. I don't really care about any of that shit, to be quite honest. It doesn't matter to me, right? But imagine, bro, you had 3 MVPs. And you chose Serge Ibaka over one of them. Amazing. But yeah, look. Raptors should win this series. The Wizards are fraudulent. Even as an 8 seed, they're a fraudulent 8 seed. I think that's just how down the East is, that they're the 8 seed. They're not that good of a team. That they're just Beal and Wall, and that's about it. They really don't have too much. Oubre isn't ready. Otto Porter, again, Hoya Saxo for life. He isn't ready. They just don't have it. And, yo, y'all might want to guard CJ Miles. Y'all might. Y'all might want to consider not letting CJ Miles sit and hit corner threes and wing threes. You might want to do that. You might want to guard him, especially at the crib. But this is the new look Raptors. This is what got all the analytics nerds in a fuss. I mean, this is why they're getting so hype over them, because they shoot a lot of threes now, and they have guys who can make them. And this is all without, you know, Van Vliet. So, you know, if the Raptors look like this, then yeah, they might get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And again, if Cleveland's not there and they go up against Philly, that's a very interesting series. But Toronto did what they had to do, take care of the Wizards, and the Wizards are up out of here. And I don't see this going no more than five games. Maybe the Wizards are able to eke two out at the crib, but if I'm the Raptors, they should get rid of them in five games. And then Warriors, Spurs, I mean, look, we know what the Spurs are. The Spurs don't have anything left in the tank. They were very lucky to hang on to the seventh seed. If Denver didn't spit the bit down the stretch, they might not even have made the playoffs. So, you know, the Spurs are without Kawhi, and we know what that means. They're Swiss cheese. And they're playing up against the Warriors, and the Warriors don't need Steph to be the Kawhi-less Spurs team. So I don't see the series going more than five games. I mean, if that, I mean, they legitimately could sweep this team. You got KD and Klay bombs away, and then you have, you know, JaVale McGee locked in. I mean, there's nothing LaMarcus Aldridge to do. There's only so much. LaMarcus Aldridge is a good player and all-star, but he has a ceiling. And he's pretty close to that ceiling, if not on the decline. So he doesn't have enough in the tank to carry this team, and to carry this team, especially against that Dubs team. So this should be another quick series. So, seriously, if you go around and check what a lot of people are predicting, you're predicting a lot of 6-7-game series, where are they? I don't see them. Now, maybe I'm proven wrong, and that doesn't happen too often on this podcast, but we'll see. But when it comes right down to it, the Warriors will make quick work of the Spurs, as they should, and then they'll go ahead and get the fraudulent two-time MVP with weak-ass ankles back, and then we'll get to see what's really popping. And that will do it for me. I am Sam Dusenberry Jr. Follow me on Twitter at TheSandy. That's TheSand. Use the hashtag PickAndPop to keep up with the show on Twitter when it's dropped. And that's PickAndPop. Hashtag PickAndPop. No and, the letter N. PickAndPop. SoundCloud.com/ShieldFreeSports is where you can find the show up on SoundCloud. Apple iTunes. Subscribe and rate. 5 stars, nothing less. Search The Pick and Pop Podcast. The Pick and Pop Podcast. Stitcher Radio, Google Play, all the other podcast outlets. That's where you can find the Pick and Pop Podcast. All right, I told y'all, when the playoffs start, we're going to ratchet up these podcasts. So we got the first weekend in. I'll check in during the week with another pod, and then maybe lead it into the weekend to get another pod. So possibly up to 3 pods this week. But you can definitely get at least one more in the middle of the week to recap where we're at after 2 games. All right, I'll holler.